This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Barbara Bogave. It's time for us to dig into our mailbag or print out those emails and answer some of your letters. This week, I'm joined by Jill Schlesinger of CBS Money Watch, and she is in New York, eager to answer your questions. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Marketplace Money, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
But we are not alone in the studio today.
No.
There he is. Senior producer Patty Hirsch is here with us. He has a whole armful of letters with him. What bounty have you brought us,
Patty? I've got vast quantities of letters. I have to say, a lot of these letters are about something that I kind of thought we dealt with in the past, which was the departure of Tess Vigeland, the previous Marketplace Money host in November.
A lot of curiosity.
A lot of curiosity. So I guess a lot of people don't listen to the show every week. I know this. So to clarify, Tess left us in November. And she's gone on to do other things. She's still in Pasadena and doing things with the Pasadena Humane Society and hosting various shows. And so in the interim, of course, we are searching for a new host. We obviously have had a number of people filling in for Tess, yourself included, Barbara. A magnificent job you're doing. You've got some great letters complimenting you this week, by the way.
Oh, lovely.
We've had David Lazarus, who's been working on the show as well. He's actually back with us next week for a few weeks. And so we're going to rotate David and Barbara until we decide who the new host of the show is going to be. That may take us a little time, so I'm hoping that listeners will bear with us.
There's a plea for patience there.
So I do have a couple of other questions that I wanted to answer, one of which kind of relates to Tess, which was the little blue piggy. Lisa Al-Anbari wrote in from Santa Monica asking, what happened to the little blue piggy? Did he or she leave with Tess? So you may remember that the piggy was the award that we used to give out at the end of the show to paragons of personal finance, you know, people who were great budgeters or great savers. Tess used to give that pig out, but we've decided that what we want to do actually is put the piggy online. So, in fact, the piggy's got a Twitter feed.
Wonderful.
So you can follow the piggy at Radio Piggy Bank. And enough of marketplace shenanigans. Let's talk about listener letters, all right? Kevin Wibble, who wrote in from Loveland, Colorado, he's saying he's starting to fantasize about retirement, but he says that even though he's 52 and on the verge of retirement, he still doesn't understand what an annuity is, variable or not, and how it works. Now, I'm going to put you under pressure here, Jill. I'm going to ask you to give us the 1 minute definition of an annuity.
Do it for
ready?
Kevin.
Okay.
Ready? Hold on a second. Ready?
Do it for the
three.
First of all, let me just start by saying, full disclosure, I'm not a big fan of annuities in general. So
okay.
Now, here we go. Ready? 3, 2, an annuity is a financial contract that's issued by a life insurance company that offers tax-deferred savings and a choice of different kinds of payout options, like income for life or income for a period of time, to meet your needs in retirement. You can put a lump sum in, you can put a little bit at a time, and if you take the money out before you're 59 and a half, you will tend to be penalized both by the IRS, and if you take it out within a period of time called a surrender period, usually 7, 8, 9, 10 years from when you start it, the insurance company will whack you. How'd I do?
That's 50 seconds
That's
for starters.
Guinness Book of World Records. I'm on the phone with them.
That was awesome. Seriously.
You didn't even pause for breath.
But this is a really big subject, actually, annuities. You know, all the different types that are out there, all the potential pitfalls.
These contracts tend to be the thorniest of contracts. I have sat down with some folks who are really super duper math heads to try to dismantle them. When I can't understand how something works, I bring in my friend who's an actuary. And they're hard. So if you feel like you don't understand something, chances are you shouldn't buy it. Mm. So be very careful before you buy one.
Great. We have some listeners on the line with slightly more complicated issues, not more complicated than annuities, but challenging ones. And Dave is on the line, I see, from Cincinnati, Ohio. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, thanks for letting me call in.
So what's on your mind?
I finally hit a point where I'm not getting any more tax benefits from having a traditional IRA. And so I've always used that IRA to kind of counterbalance what's a pretty crummy 401k as far as fees and all that is concerned. So I'm trying to figure out what I should do with that. Is it something that I should look to convert to a Roth IRA now and take the tax hit? Or is that something that I should maybe just let it sit and collect dust for a little while? I'm just not really sure what I should do with that right now.
And how much money are we talking, Dave?
It's really only like $15,000. So it's not a huge account, but, you know, we're both 29. I'm married. And so we're just trying to get that all started. And I don't want to make a fatal error now that, you know, I'm going to look back on in 30 years and be like, oh, we could be comfortable now if we had done that right.
15 in an IRA at 29. I'm impressed, though.
Yeah, good for you for getting
started.
Yeah,
good job.
And he makes a lot of money because we now know that he cannot contribute to a IRA and take the tax deduction. So that means you must be making more than $112,000 as a married couple. Is that right?
Pretty much right at that. So, yeah, okay. It was kind of one of those rude awakenings when I was doing my taxes just the last week, and I realized, oh man, we're stuck for last year. We made all those contributions, and we're not going to see any benefit.
If you were to convert to a Roth IRA, do you have the money to pay the tax due on that conversion outside of retirement?
I would prefer not to. I mean, that's going to be like a $4,000 or $5,000 hit, and so that would kind of beat up our emergency fund a good little bit.
So in that respect, conversion to a Roth does not really make sense. But as you said, you can leave it aside. You can invest it and use it for the types of investments that are not available in your own crummy 401k. You said crummy. I'm just quoting you. You could kind of round it out. So in that crummy 401k, do you have a couple of decent funds that we could maybe round out with the old IRA?
Potentially. So how would, and you'll have to forgive me on this one, but how would that work? Because my 401k is, you know, where my company decided to put it with one investment firm, and then my own personal IRA is with my own investment firm.
Which is perfect. Perfect. So in the 401k, do you have an index fund option within that 401k?
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. An S&P 500 or a different kind of index?
I think we have a couple. I think there's an S&P 500 and then there's a whole bunch of different indexes too, but that one's the one. Yeah.
The key here is to use the best of what's available in your current 401k. So, you know, you're young and, you know, I don't know how much risk you want to take. Maybe you want to be 70% in risky stuff and 30% not so risky. What you want to do is you want to say, wherever I can use an index fund in my 401k, I can use that. But let's just pretend you didn't have an international stock index. Then what I might do is I might use the IRA funds to put an international index in there. So you want to just use that IRA with kind of filling in the gaps for what is not available in your current 401k.
Excellent. That makes sense to me.
Perfect. And just make sure that, you know, you're coordinating with your wife as well, that, you know, you want to use the best of what's available in all of your accounts. But look at it holistically, use the cheapest available options, and make sure you remain diversified.
Dave, good luck. Good luck with that crummy IRA.
Thanks so much for the help.
Take care.
Coming up, more of your letters with Jill Schlesinger.
Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm here with Jill Schlesinger of CBS Money Watch and also Patty Hirsch, the senior producer of Marketplace Money. And we're taking your calls. We have Amy on the line from Alfred, Maine. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I go to Maine every summer, but I am not familiar with Alfred. Where are you exactly?
We are little. There's only about 2,000 of us here. We're southwest of Portland in the woods.
Oh, lovely. What does it look like out your window right now?
Pretty white.
Can you see out of your window?
We've done a lot of shoveling, but I can see.
Well, you called us today because you're in a giving mood, I understand. What's your question for Jill?
Yeah, we always struggle buying gifts for kids because we don't like buying a bunch of plastic. And we have a niece and nephew on my husband's side who would really benefit from college savings accounts, and we'd like to contribute to that, you know, small gifts like $50 or $100 here or there. But their parents are not savers. They're not really earners either. I mean, it would be a far-fetched idea for them to set it up, I think. They don't do paperwork. They don't have their own bank account. And I don't want to create any tension with sort of harping on the parents to set up a 529 account because that's a responsible thing to do, blah, blah, blah. That's the last thing they want to hear from me. But I would love to set up a 529 account for their kids and that I could contribute to, you know, like I said, in small amounts. And I just haven't found a way to set up a 529 for a kid that's not your own.
One thing does occur to me, that college is not for everyone. And there's some careers that you don't need to have a college degree for anymore, like Silicon Valley tech genius. and I just wondered if you've thought about that before you go further with the plan.
I have. Because I have a 9-month-old, and I had the exact same thought with hers. Like, who knows? You know, I don't want to tie up a bunch of money for a 4-year college and then have her not want to go. But it seems like there are a lot of options. You can use it towards trade school or grad school or books and room and board if you get a scholarship or beauty school or whatever.
You've
and
really
it kind of seems like
No
matter what someone's going to do post-secondary, they could benefit from this money. And then if they really can't, you can really pass it to another family member. So it seems like there's a lot of options with it.
Amy, you sound like a personal financial consultant.
Amy, you're hired.
I'm just a farmer and a mom.
Jill, I'll let you have a go at this.
A couple of choices. And again, if you're not setting up a way to put away tons and tons of money, you can also look into the Coverdell IRA, which is can be used for secondary school if there's going to be some private school, potentially a little bit more flexible. But let's say you want to do the 529. There is no problem. You can own this account. You, Amy, own the account and make the beneficiary your nieces and nephews. You do need their social security numbers, but that's all you do need. Before I came on here, I just sort of out of, you know, the blue had gone on to a website that I love called savingforcollege.com. It's a really good site. It helps you kind of explore different 529 plans. You can click on a state. And that may be a good place. You sound like you're really into research. What you'll likely find if you want to buy a 529 or open an account in a state where you don't reside, then there's lots of options. But plans in Utah is a very good plan. There's no residency requirement there. Nevada has a very good plan. So you should look around and check that out. There is, as you say, you know, there is no obligation to, you know, necessarily send your kids to school in that place. And they can be moved pretty easily among siblings.
That sounds great.
Amy, I am curious, how do you think the parents will respond to this gift?
It's a delicate relationship and we'll have to approach it carefully, but I'm hoping we can do it in a really positive way. If this is just, you know, a birthday present that we wanted to provide and hopefully couch it in enough positivity that they don't feel like they're being judged.
Right. So that was very nicely put, I have to say. It'd be difficult to refuse that.
Yep.
Beautiful. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot.
And now we have another caller on the line ready for us. Let's talk to Shirley. She's calling us from right here in California, Santa Ana. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you.
So reading your letter to us a little earlier, I feel as if you might have something like a post-traumatic stock market syndrome.
It just doesn't go away.
It doesn't. No, this past 6 years have been hard on most people, but this unstable market, it really is hard to figure out how to invest. And it sounds as if it's been especially emotionally challenging for you.
Well, you know, I stuck it out through all the various recessions and so forth through the years and left the money ride and fared very well. And I probably would have fared much better had I left it there this time, too. But
so what happened? What have you been doing with your investments?
I moved it into government bonds.
And so what's your question for Jill?
Well, because I moved the money out of the stock market right at the end of the year when they, you know, the fiscal cliff was the big talk, and the market started going up, so I'd really like to move some money back into it, but I don't quite know how to do it. I'm afraid if I buy now, I'll be up at the top of the market and it'll drop down again.
So when you were in December and the fiscal cliff rhetoric is heating up and it's getting you completely bananas.
Yes.
And you sold out all of your risky holdings then, right?
That's right. Uh-huh.
Okay. And so before that, what percentage of your total was in risky stuff?
About 20%. It varied from 20 to 25.
Okay. We're going to like give you a little tiny demerit because you did what we beg you not to do, which is sell out when you're freaked out.
That pesky fiscal cliff.
It was the apocalyptic language. It scared everybody. And I think that's the point, isn't it? So often we hear these news stories, the headlines go bananas. And that is the time, as Jill says, to hold on as opposed to selling out, because that's when everybody's selling out.
Patty, be kind to Shirley. This was awful. I feel for her.
Shirley, you're retired now.
Yes.
Do you receive a pension?
Yes, I do.
Do you receive Social Security?
No.
Okay. Is your pension sufficient to support you in your lifestyle?
Yeah, because I'm also a VA where I'm drawing on my deferred comp as well. So
now here's the thing. You really should not be so freaked out about going back in. and let me remind you why. You have a longer time horizon than you believe. So I didn't ask you how old you are, but since I know you've taken your required minimum distributions, you're over 70 and a half, right?
Yes.
And so as a result, what I want you to be thinking about is this has to be a long-term portfolio. And one of the reasons, and I think 20% is probably about the right amount for you, because that will be a really nice hedge against potential future inflation. You've got a big bond position. Those bonds could hurt you really badly if interest rates start zooming back up again, if we have inflation.
They're warning about that now.
So. And so here's an idea. When you think about getting back in, you don't have to do it all at once. Maybe you say, okay, over the next 4 or 5 months, I'm going to get back invested. And then you're going to rotate every single month a certain percentage back into that moderate stock fund till you get to your 20%. And then you're going to pinky swear with yourself that you will not get shaken out of the market again and do what everyone else does, which is buy high and sell low.
Yeah.
So even if the market goes up from here, I don't want you to think about putting more than 20% in. But if the market does go down, you should know going in, I have a long enough time horizon, and I don't need to get freaked out by this market because I will not do that again. Unless you can say that to yourself, and I think you can actually, then don't do it, because there's going to be another bad thing that happens. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to be a fiscal cliff. It's going to be sequestration. It's going to be something nasty that comes up,
yeah.
And the market's going to move around. And you have to be comfortable being able to ride it out.
Nerves of steel, Shirley.
Comfort level, but the funny thing is the comfort level should come from the very mere fact that you don't have a portfolio that you need to drain anytime soon.
You sound pretty tough, though. And I think it's an interesting proposal, Jill. It's almost as if Shirley could invest as young as she feels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great.
Yeah.
And maybe listen to CNN a little less. I hope it's smooth sailing for you. And thanks so much for calling in.
All right. Thank you.
And that's it for the letters today. I certainly learned a lot. I do want to give a moment, though, to Patty to take us out.
Jill gave us some great information there, directed us to a couple of websites. Now, in the past, listeners have heard recommendations from people that we've had on the show, and they've gone to the website, and they can't find things. So what we've done is we've created a new domain, and we're going to call it marketplacemoney.org. Very simple. If you go there, you'll find all of the Marketplace Money information much more simply. It's all cased right there, and we'll be building that over time so that it becomes a great resource for people on the personal finance front.
Thanks so much, Patty.
Thank you.
And thanks, Jill. Jill, editor-at-large of CBS Money Watch, Jill Schlesinger. It's lovely to have you on the air.
Barbara, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.